Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
My go-to karaoke song. I've never sung that shit in my life, just for the record.
She left the yellow rose
and a long neck bottle on the table beside my bed.
Yeah, you could see, you could hear that shit, right? It's like, is it real or is it Memorex?
Written in lipstick red.
Joining me is Alex Hollings. How good was that shit? Seriously.
What a way to start a show. Fantastic.
Not every host rolls like that, but are you a karaoke guy? Have you ever been one?
I've never been a karaoke guy, but I have been drunk enough to do karaoke.
Oh, no. What's your go-to karaoke song?
I don't think I have a go-to. I guess anything by Tenacious D. In high school, I was in a Tenacious D cover band. So that's probably the only – I don't know the words to, I think, any songs other than Tenacious D songs. My wife makes fun of me mercilessly. I cannot really remember the lyrics to any song, so anytime I do sing along, I'm usually making it up.
Most people are like that, though. I mean, and then if you do like, you know, if your kid likes The Lion King and you hear like Hakuna Matata, nobody knows the words of that son of a bitch.
It's right? Funny you say that. I literally just introduced my daughter to Hakuna Matata last night.
Get out of town!
We watched the original Disney cartoon version of it, then we watched the new version. I didn't like. It's in the uncanny valley. It's a little too real looking, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't like it.
No, you know what? So as a family, we go see the new one where the animals are like real animals and they're talking.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there, and this is like in the first 10 minutes of the movie, and I say it loud enough for my older kids to hear, like, how did they get the animals to talk like that? Right? Right, and you see like three of them all lean forward and look at me, right? And I look at them, I'm like, you stupid asses, like, no fucking shit, the animals aren't talking.
You know, it's
they're like, hey, we didn't know if you knew that. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
I took a picture of my daughter yesterday because she's gonna be 3 years old here in about 2 weeks. But she's already mastered the dad, you're embarrassing me look.
Come on.
Like, I don't know. She is maybe I'm just so embarrassing. I'm like some kind of a dad phenom.
No, if you're a dad and you don't embarrass your kids on a regular basis, and if you don't look at them and think, oh, you don't think that I'll dial that shit up even louder in front of God and everybody here? This could
exactly.
get worse. Let's not go there, girlfriend. Yeah.
We didn't end up doing any trick-or-treating. There was no trick-or-treating.
Yeah, I have
here.
The biggest bowl of candy. Nobody. I got zero.
So I had no – we bought a big bowl of candy, and I had nobody until all of a sudden at like 8:30 at night, a tractor pulling a full hayride showed up at my house with like
awesome.
30 kids on it. So I was able to just kind of like throw my candy out into that mob. My daughter, you know, she's too young to really know she's missing out on trick-or-treating. You
right,
know, she,
that's good.
She's 2 years old. She's seen trick-or-treating happen before.
Right,
but
right.
We ended up going to my brother's house so that her and my niece and nephew could all run around and throw candy at each other
and
for a while.
And put on their costumes and all that good stuff, right?
Exactly.
I mean, her
yeah.
best days of trick-or-treating and pumpkin throwing and mayhem are all in front of her.
Absolutely. Honestly, I feel like I didn't enjoy Halloween until I was old enough to go trick-or-treating without my parents.
Well, that is the true fun of it. I mean, if you're just candy collecting, come on. That's a limited value. But I was a good kid. I was always kind of scared of that stuff, honestly. Yeah.
I never really did any real hell raising. I mean, I got myself in a little bit of trouble here and there, you know, over the years, but I was pretty AJ squared away before I
really?
Even joined the Marine Corps. Yeah.
That's saying something because you grew up around, you know, around people that could have influenced you not to be like that.
That's true. You know, I absolutely did. I think that
why do you think you turned out? I mean, who created the voice in your head that kept you away from that shit?
You know what? I have no idea. I should say my parents. But
you should.
I should.
But you didn't.
but I didn't. Over the years, I've wondered a lot how I kind of turned out the way
that
I did.
Do you think that was part just Alex – that's who Alex P. Keaton is?
Maybe. You know, and I'm sure my parents played a role. But, I mean, my dad, for instance, when I was growing up, my dad's approach to drugs was always – I mean, drugs aren't that bad. Just don't do too many of them. You know, was kind of – and I ended up being that straight-edge guy in high school who wouldn't even drink. I don't know
that was me.
How I ended up wired that way.
That was me. Well, I do. I mean, I saw alcohol was a problem in our house.
Mine too. I think you might be right there.
Yeah, yeah. My parents were my parents' marriage was falling apart because of it. I never saw my dad drunk. But, you know, like most parents, I mean, you came home and you had a beer and they had wine with dinner and whatnot. And then my older sister was a partier, and it was not a pleasant time in my house when she was a senior in high – well, it was after she was in high school. In college, I was a junior in high school, and it was not pleasant. And I thought, you know what? You know, and we had confrontations and you know, 2 a.m, bouncing off the walls, my mom not knowing what's going on and all that kind of stuff. And so,
you know, I think you nail it, because in my house, it was my dad who had problems with drinking. Right. And I think you're probably right. It's if you see the negative side of it, it really helps you understand that maybe it's not something for you.
Well, you know, you're right. I went away to college and I got drunk with my friends and all the rest of that stuff. But I never did it around, you know, my mother. And I was very conscious of inflicting. I'd seen the pain that it inflicted. And then throughout the rest of my life, I mean, the more I worked and then and the more I would read at night and study, I couldn't drink. And then I just stopped. And again, I'll drink. I'll have a glass of wine with dinner on occasion. I like to have beer with Chinese food. But other than that, to just drink it, to come home and say, I need a beer. You know, let's crack one. That's not me. In fact, if there's a beer in the refrigerator, my kids look and say, what's going on?
You know, I'm like, I don't drink beer hardly ever. I will have a mixed drink, but kind of like you, it's like I'll drink with dinner or something like that. But once I get to that certain point where even you're starting to get a buzz, maybe I've just been hungover too many times, but I cannot help but already start worrying about potentially having a hangover tomorrow.
Oh, really? And I try to teach my kids.
There are things I hate more than a hangover.
Oh, really? I try to teach my kids that the art is you don't need to get to 30,000 feet. Get to 7,000 feet and cruise at 7,000 feet.
Yeah, because there's actually no fun in being at 30,000 feet. I don't enjoy being drunk.
Yeah, nothing really good comes out of like, hey, remember that time I was really hammered and all these great things that happened to me?
Yeah,
that tends
right?
not to be the narrative. Especially
the older you get and the dadder you become,
yeah,
where you're just like,
you're still
great.
Doing that.
Yeah. Instead, I am incredibly boring. And
well, it's like getting in bar fights after you get out of college. If you're
100% agreed, there's no value in a fight.
If you're still doing that, at some point, somebody's going to either go into their pocket or go into the back of their trunk and they're going to pull out a knife, a chain, or a gun. And something bad's going to happen. I mean,
and even if things go well for you and you win a fight in a bar, this is something. I'll admit readily that I was kind of a punk when I was young, and I've been in a number of fights that I shouldn't have gotten into. But at a certain point, you get to where you go, okay, so worst case scenario, I'm going to get beat up in front of my wife. Best case scenario, I'm going to get arrested in front of my wife. You know, so where's the benefit? Where's the upside to me getting into a fight with this guy at the bar? I can either get embarrassed in front of my wife or get embarrassed in front of my wife and have to pay a bunch of money as well. It doesn't sound like a real good night to me.
No, it doesn't. You know? It doesn't. The most impressive thing about the SEAL Team 6 raid over the weekend or late last week to free an American hostage was?
I mean, are you asking me? Because I would say probably how rapidly we did it, but also the fact that we killed all but one of their combatants, and none of us got hurt or killed. I'd call that a good day, you know.
I would combine that with the fact that there are very few details that have leaked out about it. which I think is the greater win for SEAL Team 6. You know what I mean? Because they're, again, there's their abilities have never been in question, right? I mean, they are at the very, very top of a very, very small spectrum.
For anybody who may not be aware of what SEAL Team 6 is, what Mac is saying is he's 100% right. This is effectively a special operations unit comprised entirely out of Navy SEALs that are selected to go to DEVGRU or SEAL Team 6. So it's basically
out of all the other
best of the Navy SEALs.
Of all the other SEAL teams that feed into this one team, that is SEAL Team 6. And so they executed an operation to rescue an American late last week, and we found out about it. But to me, you know, their major crisis in their community is a crisis of really
it's a cultural one.
Yeah, integrity and confidence that you can be swift, silent, and silent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have not been able to do that. They leak like a sieve. And I remember when Delta guys, combined with a Marine platoon that was QRFing in Syria, killed somewhere between 200 and 400 Russians, blew up a bunch of tanks, repelling mm-hmm. a Russian attack. And it wasn't really the Russians. It was the Wagner Group. And so the reason this story becomes a story is there's – people that have are burying people in like St. Petersburg, and there's literally hundreds of people being buried, and the story comes out of Russia like that. Like, what happened? Crickets, crickets, crickets. And the answer to why there was never a story was Delta Force.
And I'll tell you, I know a couple of guys that are former Delta, one of whom writes for Sandbox News, George Hand, and So Delta Force, for anybody who may not be super familiar, could be kind of seen as a parallel to SEAL Team 6. There are some dramatic differences in the way that they recruit. Delta actually recruits from across all occupational specialties and even all branches. You could feasibly be a former Navy SEAL on Delta. It's possible.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was an Army event.
So Delta is absolutely primarily Army, but you don't necessarily have to have started in the Army to go Delta.
Okay.
SEAL Team 6, on the other hand, recruits from within the SEAL community.
Yep.
Delta effectively recruits far and wide, right? But in terms of – so Tier 1 is technically a funding thing. So you could be like a Tier 1 admin guy. So when people say Tier 1 though, they're usually talking about DEVGRU and Delta, SEAL Team 6 and Delta. They are the most elite special operations warfighters in the United States. And I would contend in the world and probably in history. And so, for instance, the reason why Delta wasn't tapped for this mission over the weekend and SEAL Team 6 was, this is something Sandbox had, I believe, exclusively, was it really just came down to assets available near the location, right? And that's kind of what's happened with our special operations community throughout the war on terror. Every special operations unit is supposed to have kind of a specialty, right? Navy SEALs are amphibious warfare, right? Delta is usually counter-terror. They were really established primarily for airline hijackings initially. Army Rangers could kind of be seen as the infantry of the special operations community. They're the guys who show up with some machine guns. Everybody's kind of got a specialty niche, but you have to cross-train in a great deal of specialized things. Since the global war on terror, though, we've kind of had all our special operations units doing the same jobs. And we're still seeing that with Delta and SEAL Team 6.
Which is
like
the
this.
Direct action, door kicker, blah, blah,
exactly.
blah. Right? And in the Tier 1 organizations, Delta, SEAL Team 6, you know, very small, very elite. And what's been... You know, what's been interesting, you know, is this, you know, we've seen the SEALs on display repeatedly for their inability to seemingly wear this mantle of this elite force and be silent and make a contribution and then just fade away, you know, like was their custom. And so to me, that's I've been watching, you know, to see when do we see the movie, when do we get the screenplay. And
there
so,
is a big joke within the mill journalist community about Navy SEALs getting book deals. It's general issue.
Oh my god! No, Right. It's almost like the glamour puss. It's a career path. It's I'm gonna try to get on a SEAL team, and then I'm gonna be a media guy and blah blah blah. And I will trade on that trident, for the rest of my life. And so anyway, the next question: have you seen the social media? I mean, the social dilemma.
I haven't watched it. I've read a couple of articles about it. The reason why I haven't watched it, I think, to be honest, is that I do track on a lot of this stuff, and I'm certain that the social dilemma is going to tell me a bunch of stuff I already know, that social media is bad for us, right? But I do think I do think it's an important story. The reason why I haven't watched it in particular is I really hate documentaries that are trying to make a statement about society. They're always just dripping with bias, which I, maybe the social dilemma isn't.
You need to watch it so you can advise us on what you think relative to.
That's fair.
I don't think they're trying to convince as much as they're trying to just put a warning out there of this is what this does, this is why it does what it does, and we need to. I'd be curious about.
Yeah, I'll definitely – it's one of those ones that I keep going, yeah, I should watch it. But I also worry that it's just going to put me in a bad mood for the rest of the night.
Well, you know, I will say – I don't think it will. I don't think it will, and here's why. Because you're a thoughtful guy, and I think it's summoning us to a dialogue about these powerful forces that we've released in our culture, right? And that affect children. Right?
Absolutely.
Because that electronic pacifier that they become welded to, right, at a very early age is designed to drill further and further into their brainstem. That's what – and it does so for commercial profit. And
100%. And right? Honestly, I worry that the commercial profit was obviously the first thing that we did because it was the most direct revenue line from the form of influence that you get through social media. Right. But it's only a matter of time before we start recognizing the second and third order effects of this kind of data collection. And I don't even know what that'll look like.
And really, it's the data collection is one thing. It's the way that you – right? So you collect the data by keeping people hooked longer. It's,
and how do you keep them hooked longer?
It's the notification thing. It's the it's the app that says, rate my face, right? Rate my booty, and all of a sudden you see with the advent of social media the diagnosis of depression, anxiety, and suicide in preteens and teenage girls in particular, go through the roof historically based on what it had been in the United States. And you're like, wait a minute. We probably should have a discussion about this. Does everybody know this? And, there's some great lines in the movie. That's why you need to watch it so we could talk about it. And one is, look, these companies are worth hundreds of billions of dollars, but you don't pay a penny for them. So what's the value? And then somebody else says, if you don't pay for it, you're the product.
You're the product. You're paying with your information. 100%.
And you're just like,
this is the thing about the internet is that the internet tricked us early on into believing that everything on the internet would be free.
Seduced us, right?
It did. And it was because the beginning of the internet was, a bunch of nerds like me that you don't have to pay anything to read my analysis work on Sandbox News. If I didn't do this for a living, I would almost certainly still be doing it. Okay. And the internet started – before people had found a way to monetize information, the internet started with nerds like me putting information out there because getting information out there and having other people read it was exciting enough, right? But then we figured out that we can monetize it. But people had already used the internet for years at that point by the time we started looking for ways to really monetize it in a commercial way. So because of that, we had already set this precedent that you're going to get access to whatever it is that you want to go to on the internet for free. People are still incredibly reluctant to subscribe, to use paywalls on content, even though you're seeing it more and more often on news outlets. Right. People don't want to pay for stuff. But these businesses still have to be lucrative. or they'll go away.
Well, and so what happened is you used to have a storefront, and they used to publish an edition. And all that has dried up and gone away. So how do they invent me? In fact, it's really interesting. One of the guys in The Social Dilemma is the guy who designs the monetization strategy for this tool called Facebook. Okay, so we have this thing. How do we make it make money? You know? And so that was a big conversation. How do we monetize this thing? And so the advertising model is what, and then so we're going to collect people's data. We're going to track what they do in a way that, so, you know, and they talk about your feed is unique to an algorithm that is maintained by everything that you do on that device. They track it every second of every single day, and that algorithm is constantly updating, right, and making recommendations to suck you further, right, into that phone to monopolize more your time, which creates revenue for them, yada, yada, yada. And it's fascinating.
Honestly,
it's fascinating.
I can speak to that from the customer standpoint who pays these platforms.
My point was this. So the money's got to come from someplace. Either it's got to come from you in forms of a subscription like you used to pay the paperboy, or advertisers now, instead of like buying ads – you know, in the newspaper, they're paying for, you know, impressions, durations, blah, 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 blah. And they're paying a lot of money because what they've shown is that, and Alex has told us this, for this amount of money, I can deliver you this.
Exactly.
And they can
honestly
say
where does
so,
the money come from? It comes from me. I pay Facebook a ton of money every month for Sandbox News. I pay Twitter significantly less. I pay LinkedIn even less. Facebook is the biggest one.
And why? Because they can deliver you straight to the demographic that you want. And you know, yep, if you can get to that demographic, that means that your sponsors are going to get what they want and what you've sold them. And so the revenue is going to come from somebody. And so to me, the cool part is that this is the conversation that we should have, you know, that we should have. And it's fascinating towards the end when they start talking about, do you allow your kids on social media? And they're adamant.
Which is
no.
I think my answer is no, man. I mean, no. Obviously,
oh my God,
it's
going
to come to
it.
A point where it's not my choice. But
these are people that, you know, that founded some of these companies that were in on the ground floor. And so I think you will find it, you know, interesting because it doesn't give you a conclusion. I think as much as it illustrates a problem, and then it. I think invites a broader dialogue in terms of where does this go? Because it doesn't offer a solution. It says, look, we know these trends are trending in the wrong direction. We see more friction now in the nation whenever. Well, why is that? Because, you know, my news feed is constantly telling me this. Okay, well, you pull your news feed up and then take somebody in the room who you don't agree with and pull their news feed up and then switch phones.
And you'll realize that you live in completely different realities.
Exactly.
You know, because people tend not to realize that these screens that we have, these are our windows into the world further away than the horizon, right? Like you can open your window and you can look out and you'll see your street and maybe the next street. And it's pretty quiet and it's pretty lame, right? Like, because it turns out real life is overwhelmingly boring, right? But when you have access to everyone's window, it's number one, it's a lot easier to find other people who are assholes just like you so that you can feel justified in what an asshole you are, because look at all these other people who tell me that I'm right. But the other thing that it really does is it shapes your perception of the world. I say this about pop culture all the time because people are very dismissive of pop culture. Keeping up with the Kardashians is stupid, right? Watching football on Sunday is a recreational activity and not in any way a political one or a cultural one. That's not true. You know, the movies that you watch, the shows you tune in for, the websites that you frequent – you're not just giving these companies business. You are shaping your perception of the world in which you exist. Like wedding rings, engagement rings, it's a great example. Engagement rings were not popular in the United States until the 1940s when De Beers started an advertising campaign to convince us that you need a diamond in order to signify a marriage. That wasn't real prior to that.
Well, now the guideline now what is the guideline? 2.5 months of your pay should be devoted to
It's supposed to be 2.5 months or 3 months pay, right, for this diamond. That is actually not as rare as it seems, because De Beers is also creating an artificial shortage so that they can charge you a great deal of money. But, I mean, there are other things. Eating carrots to improve your vision, that's born out of UK propaganda from World War II. Women shaving their legs and armpits dates back to World War II. It wasn't big prior to that. It was all a shaving campaign.
First of all, let's just thank Gillette, okay?
Yeah,
God bless Gillette.
I mean, even the idea of halitosis, Listerine was marketed as a thing you could use to clean your floor. And then we came up with this idea for bad breath being a health malady, and they invented halitosis.
Not maybe your health, but the health of other people.
Exactly. These things, like the way that we see the world, really is shaped by these little screens that we use, or the advertisements you see on billboards or on the bus. Right. They really do shape how we perceive the world.
No, they're powerful, and they'll draw, because the criticism is, and I've said these things, you and I might have you might have even kicked this around. How is it different than when television showed up? How is it different than when
radio
showed up initially, right? And what you have is you have the people that have designed these systems that say, yeah, it's not the same. And that's why we have to have this conversation. That device is capable of things, right, that those other mediums were not. And it is crawling down your brainstems. It is involved in the endorphins that are circulating. The others did not have –
same thing with the food industry, right? It's addictive, literally addictive.
Did not – the others did not have that capability, right? And then all you have to do – one of the interesting things they talked about was, do you remember when Kyrie Irving, the basketball player, on TV some point said he believed the earth was flat?
I do remember this. I think it was Blake Griffin maybe.
Kyrie Irving, but anyway. And then he later said, I want to apologize for that. I went down this YouTube rabbit hole. And they talked about the strategies of how do you keep somebody watching? Well, it has to be – your suggestions have to be slowly but surely more exciting, right? So you start by doing a search on World War II concentration camps, right? Then within two or three clicks of watching, right, you're going to get Holocaust denial videos. You're going to get
100%.
Right. And so they're taking you down this. And so they said, now, look, that's done very deliberately by the algorithm. You could just as easily take you to more moderated, right, acceptable historically content. But they won't do that because their data says you are only maybe 50% likely to click on that, where you're 62% likely to click on the white hotter stuff. And they said,
and it's important that you note that it's not just because they think you'll like it. It's often because they think you'll be furious, because anger is a really, really powerful impetus for action. This is part of why our news feeds are so infuriating.
The reason for your click is irrelevant, right?
Exactly. Yeah. A click out of rage is the same as a click out of support, right?
Just
like a comment. When you comment under a story to say Hannity's an asshole, or Alan Combs, I mean, I know he's dead now, but Alan Combs is an asshole.
Be careful with Alan Combs.
Because you comment it, you just exposed that article. Even if you were saying that this is a bad article, this is bad journalism, the act of commenting exposed that article to 15 people out of your friends list.
Right, right. I just commented this morning on something. The other thing I would tell you to watch is Shelby and Eli Steele made a documentary called What Killed Michael Brown. It was initially banned on Amazon, and they have since rescinded that. I think in part because of public reaction to what they did. And I would tell you to watch that, and I'd be curious to and again, this is it's a really interesting story. So the story is about what killed Michael Brown, not who, but the forces in our culture that create enduring poverty, right? And Shelby Steele's a black guy. He's a chair at the Hoover Institute, which is, I mean, pretty robust, albeit conservative think tank, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so he goes and he's walking through Ferguson, telling the story of his own family, that, you know, came from slaves in Kentucky, blah, 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 blah. And, but it's fascinating. Now this morning, before I came on the show, I watched it last night, and I did a search on Google, and what killed, and I don't know how many recommendations, 10 come up underneath that. Not one of them is Michael Brown. I type in the word Michael. What killed Michael Jackson? What killed Michael Landon? What killed every Michael? What killed the Archangel Michael? And nothing comes up. What killed Michael Brown? And I'm like, well, maybe that's – let me try a different browser. Right? So I fire up Mozilla. Same results. And I thought, holy shit. So I do the same search in Bing, and it comes up. And I thought, wow. That's big technology, right? Altering what I could see. Amazon, even after they agreed to allow the DVD to be sold so I can stream it, you can't rent it. You have to buy it at either $14 or $20 if you want to buy the HD version. So there's a form of economic segregation there. You can't watch it for free if you're a member of Prime on Amazon. We're not going to mainstream it, and so it's fascinating what's going on in our culture, and then you see these forces align politically, right? So that the narrative trumps our news reporters, and our reporters have to go out and affirm the narrative, right? Through news, which has always been a separate deal, and it's this discussion, this confluence of this is kind of like. This is me as like a really high-end writer. The confluence of American political power, right? Big tech, big social media, which I would tell you is different than big tech, big retail in America, the confluence, and then big media, journalism. The confluence of those five things may or may not be interested in the truth. Because it's the narrative that's important now, because the whole function of reporting has been corrupted. The truth isn't where it's at anymore. We'll tell you what the truth is. And to me, it's this thing that we have to talk about in our country. How about that for the deep end of the fucking pool, man?
Well, I got to say, so I agree with a lot of what you said, but I do have a couple counterpoints.
Sure.
The first one is I think that – you're using deductive reasoning, which is really good when you say, you know, I went on Google and when I type in what killed Michael, I don't get this. When I went on Bing, I did. I 100% agree with you. But then when we're talking about the cost of watching it, you have to buy it, you can't rent it. That's a logical inference that you're making, is that Amazon will only let you purchase it. When the truth is that licensing deals are licensing deals. It could very well be that the company who owns the rights to it doesn't want it to be rentable. You know, they only want to sell, for instance.
Okay. Let me tell you, I will take that for action. I'll go find out, because you're right. You're right. That's a deal that they put together. So let me go find.
So there, it may well be that they're trying to limit exposure, but it also might be unrelated, right?
Got it.
But then when we're talking about, again, I agree with you, this confluence of political power, of retail power, of social media power, and tech power. But I am hesitant to say that it's the worst today that it's ever been, even though it is really terrible. I'm always – every time we get into an election year, in my chest, I feel like it's the worst one we've ever had.
I don't believe that, though. And I didn't say that, the worst we've ever had. And again, I said this earlier today. You know, for all the people to say, this is the biggest election in my time. I thought about this. The biggest election in my lifetime was the election that put George Bush in office, who expanded one war and started a second one that continues to impact the planet today as we have this conversation.
I think that's a fair assessment. That was the biggest election in my lifetime.
And guess what? The sun is going to come up Wednesday.
Exactly.
And whether it's Donald Trump, the American democracy will survive.
Yep.
All right. And we will fight our way through this. In my opinion, we will reconcile ourselves with big technology. We will make this work because that's what Americans have always done. Right. But normally it has to get to a crisis point before we do it.
I agree. So
one of the subplots of hour one is the whole Chicken Little thing. I don't buy it.
And honestly, I understand, you know, when you go back and you read, you know, newspaper headlines from the early 1800s, we were doing it then too, the Chicken Little thing. I honestly, it is perhaps what I – maybe number three things that I like the least about America's political apparatus is our the way that we treat every political decision as though it has to be a decision between extremes. You can't choose a candidate because you agree with what they're doing on this thing. You have to like agree with everything that the candidate has ever said or done in order to vote for someone, which is just silly.
Right.
You know, and this way that we approach every election as though it's the one that's going to decide the future of America, which I know both Biden and Trump have used that rhetoric, you know, in this election. This is the decision. We're voting on the very future of our nation. The truth is that we're making decisions that affect the future of our nation literally every day.
Literally every day. Right. And so, yeah, that's my point. We will survive this. But to me, the things that and what I pray happens is that there is a commercially viable news organization that stands up, maybe by subscription, maybe in some other format, that becomes commercially popular and profitable, and their model, right, is really high integrity news reporting, great news reporting. Because look, when you see Glenn Greenwald resign from the organization that he founds and says, I can't write what I want to write, and that's always been the deal. Right. And when you see, you know, Barry Weiss, when she left the New York Times, she talked about the new McCarthyism. Now, these people are liberals, for God's sakes. They're not conservatives. When you see that, to me, right, it ought to break squelch for you. It ought to say, hey, what is going on here? But my opinion, in our nation's history, these things have run their course. Right. And they've either had market corrective actions because people stopped watching or listening or buying newspapers, and they went someplace else because they thought it was better. And so to me, that's what I hope, Alex. I hope
that's what I'm hoping for, too,
is that it's commercially viable. And then you have on the opinion page, you have these great both liberal and conservative and progressive and people in between, right, writers that constantly sends you back to reconsider an idea.
And wouldn't that be great if that's what analytical writing started doing for us?
Oh my God. You know? Oh my God.
Because it is right now, we start with the confirmation bias, right? Like I if you know that you're gonna vote for Donald Trump, you start at Hannity, right? And if you know if you're gonna vote for Joe Biden, you start at the New York Times. Right. When the truth is that you're really kind of doing yourself a disservice by just going and asking someone to pat you on the head for your beliefs. Right. Our beliefs are supposed to be able to withstand scrutiny. We're supposed to be able to have a dialogue without it becoming an ad hominem attack on one another, without saying, oh, you like that guy, so you're a racist, or you like that guy, so you're obviously a communist,
or you're a racist simply because you're white and breathing air. That,
right?
That we can have a discussion and you could actually feel comfortable saying, the fuck I am. I've never been a racist in my life. I'm not one now. Right? So by does that logic, does that make me a wife beater? And what else am I? Simply because I don't meet your threshold for fighting against it because of the way I live my life. What else am I? You know, what else do I have to disprove that for you, right? And so to me, but you know what the problem is, Alex, we can't, I mean, you can't have that conversation. You can't, I mean, LeBron James can stand up at a press conference and say that, you know, cops are hunting black men, and not one reporter will say, LeBron, I mean, but the Washington Post database and the FBI database tell a different story. You know, would you care to comment on that? Nobody will even ask that question because what? Before you get home, you'll be canceled and fired. You know, you'll be canceled. And so there's this.
I have an answer for this that's hard.
Okay.
But my answer to this is, and it's the same thing I talk about all the time on here, and I know you always say that it's ridiculous, but we're talking about independent individual responsibility when it comes to socially policing ourselves. And the problem that we have right now, I would contend, when it comes to social policing and cancel culture, but I think it's important that we remember there's an equivalent to cancel culture. Cancel culture tends to be a left thing, right? But the right can be just as susceptible to cancel culture when you're a person that's supposed to be a part of the rights group who violates that. If you come out and say, I'm going to vote for Joe Biden this time, even though I think I'm a Republican – you know, the Lincoln Project's a great example. They are villains to the Republican Party. Right. If you don't believe and don't think like we do in our group, then you don't. Then you're not allowed in our group anymore.
Right.
We're really quick to do that. On the left, I call it a self-eating snake. Nobody can be woke enough,
right?
You can be a woke spokesperson this week, but then next week you're J.K. Rowling, and now you're a villain because you've got one belief that isn't in keeping with the group think. We run into the same thing on the right-hand side.
No, you know, let me just tell you, like, but I'm not
McCain.
Like that.
I'm not an equal opportunity.
To me,
no, I know you are.
Both sides do it, and then they act like they don't. And it's bullshit. It's bullshit. It's bullshit. You know what my frustration is? My frustration is with people that won't admit that.
Yes.
What's the difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton? Sure,
in all honesty, we've been arguing every presidential election on like the same three dead issues for 30 years, you know. But just to finish what my point was with that is that we as a group are really good. We are really, really good at identifying the stupidity in our opposition, right? And then we take that stupidity and we make that the straw man for which all of our arguments are based. And the opposition does the same for us. But you hit the nail on the head when you said everybody does it, but everybody acts like we don't see it coming from us. If we start policing our own idiots, I really do think that the discourse would improve in this country. And what I mean by that is when you're a Joe Biden voting Democrat, you know, you're a never Trumper, you do not like Donald Trump or his administration, and one of your friends who's an idiot goes on Twitter and says something that hurts your cause because they're so dumb that they're creating this straw man for Republicans to vilify. You need to be the one that says, hey, man, stop helping. You're an idiot. And on the right-hand side of it, when you do not like Joe Biden and you think that Donald Trump has gotten a really raw shake through this administration and he hasn't been given the support he needs and you really believe that Donald Trump has got like programs that can help this country, but then your dumb friend – you know, goes and sets up a roadblock heading into New York City. We've got to be the ones to say, hey, man, you're an idiot.
Yeah,
don't
wrong.
Help me.
No. And again, I'm with you, man. You know, to me, this it's okay when we do it. But did you see that they – no.
Exactly. Look,
if you, and that's why to me, you know, if you don't read – and I'll tell you what – I saw an interview that Glenn Greenwald did last week, and Greenwald starts telling you about Edward Snowden. He said, I meet Snowden, and he's got this just treasure trove of documents, and he's most disturbed about, right, the CIA and the NSA, who were charged with the CIA collecting and operating externally to the nation, have now turned these devices on the American people, but nobody knows about it. And that's Snowden's whole thing, right? And so he says, so this begins to percolate that Snowden's out there, right? And he said, and then you see James Clapper and who, you know, the other CIA players begin to come out and deny it. And he said, and you, he said, so I know the truth, right? I've seen the documents. And now I see this guy who's the director of the CIA going on TV and just and telling the American people that it's all a lie. And he said, and you're just sitting there going, holy shit, man. It's not like he said no comment. And so, and that's why to me, this dialogue that you talk about, and that's why to me, if you're a conservative and you don't follow Glenn Greenwald on Twitter, you know, you need to. Why? Because you need to find articulate voices on the left that you respect and that you'll listen to.
And, I agree. And the same way, if you're a liberal, you should probably be following Ben Shapiro.
Yes.
You know, Ben Shapiro's wrong about plenty of stuff, right about plenty of stuff. But one thing that he's always is thoughtful.
Exactly.
You won't agree with him necessarily, but you need to look at rational arguments from the opposition.
And the same thing – and let me tell you, if for those of you listening who will listen, if you have not watched What Killed Michael Brown, I would tell you by all means watch it, because what you're going to come to is that the answer for inner city poverty, right, we have social programs, right, is that – we have got to convince anybody in the inner city, and I don't care what color you are, that the way that you're going to get out is you're going to work your ass off to get out. You're going to stay in school. You're going to not get pregnant, and you're going to work your ass off, and you're going to get a job, and then you're going to get the fuck out. And you're going to, once you get out, you're going to raise your family outside of it. That is the way. It's been the way of immigrants, and it doesn't matter now what color you are. There are plenty of programs that can help you, but nobody can help you stay in school. Nobody can make the decision for you not to have sex. You have to do that. And if you do that, this country offers all kinds of shit to you. Okay? If you won't do that, there's nobody that can help that problem. And it's fascinating in the documentary, this kid that's saying that he was making $60,000 to $70,000 a day selling drugs in Chicago. He was 13, 14 years old. He then goes to prison. He gets out and now he's using his business skills, because when he came back to the block, a pastor who's in the documentary looked at him and said, yeah, I run this shit now, and we ain't having you. And the guy looks at me, he's like, what did you say to me? Right? You can imagine, just got out of prison, going to come back, and now this pastor says, yeah, I ain't having it anymore. And he challenges the guy, take your business skills that created that network and all that money. Take your business skills and become a businessman in this country. And that's his story about, you know, about this guy who's now has him doing these things. And now they run this foundation that is taking dilapidated homes, buying them, using black men that they're teaching construction skills to, and building homes, creating jobs, creating futures, and getting people out of the inner city. And Shelby Steele says, hey, this is the answer. Now, you can reject that, okay, and say, no, reparations is what has to happen. But I'm telling you, this articulate discourse that Alex and I talk about, I think so often, is based on articulate, thoughtful people like Glenn Greenwald, like Tom Friedman, right, like Shelby Steele. And it's those voices that we need to amplify in our culture and then have a grown-up conversation about the things that they say.
And to play a classic, I'll be the LT and you can be the first sergeant, just to jump on something the first sergeant said. But the truth really is that we're emotionally invested in politics in this country in a way that maybe we haven't been in a while, because a lot of people weren't paying a ton of attention, you know, through, I would say, probably the last three or four administrations. Presidential news was a once a week thing tops, you know, and now we're really emotionally invested. And the danger of being emotionally invested is that you're trying to satiate this emotional lust for change or for victory. And the truth is politics in this country shouldn't really be about that, right? Our government system was built to work kind of slowly, intentionally, so that we would not immediately just give way to the will of the mob, you know, in the same week. This is the reason why people get frustrated that legislation takes time to move through proper channels. But the reason it takes time is to make sure that we sit down and think about this, is to make sure we debate and probably compromise in almost everything that we do. But because we're emotionally invested, we don't want compromise anymore. You know, when you're emotional, when you're upset, you want to feel better and you want to win, right? And that's dangerous. What Mac's talking about is this idea of having like a calm conversation where the other person's point of view does not feel as though it's an attack on your experiences or your literal individual personality, which we tend to, you know.
Oh my
the
God.
Idea of identity politics is not a strictly left-wing thing. It is an everybody thing.
Well,
and
you know, one
bad.
Of the things that you learn in the social media, the social dilemma is this guy, his name's Tristan Harris, and he, you know, he says, well, you know, fake news spreads at a rate of 6 times
mm-hmm.
actual news. And you're just like, holy shit. And he said, so how does real news have a chance in that system? It's always hotter and sexier to read fake news. So it
makes you feel like you're a part of something special.
If that's what's amplified, he said, how does the truth ever have a chance? And he said, the answer is that it really doesn't. And so that's this world that we're creating. Is these individual echo chambers, you know, where much of it is driven by fake news or a hot, white hot version of some facts, and that's what gets the most. But if you look at the left and the right, that's what gets amplified. What Rush Limbaugh said, what Morning Joe said, which is totally over the top. Why? To get clicks. You're right, to add to
because remember,
revenue.
A rage click counts the same as a support click.
Hey, let me tell you, and if you don't think Sean Hannity is smarting, yes, if you're a conservative, if you don't think Sean Hannity is smarting because Tucker Carlson had the most watched cable news show ever last week, then you don't get it, right?
Yeah, you don't know how the industry works.
If you don't think that his producers got an absolute ass whooping last week, like, look, we're not happy that the team won. That isn't good enough. I'm the number one guy. And look, I look like the number two guy. So let's fucking go. And how do you go? You ratchet up, you know, the rhetoric, which will not be difficult. This week.
I cannot wait for this week to be over.
Oh my God, are you kidding me? Please. I feel like Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Please let this pass over me if it's all possible.
I'm super fortunate that because Sandbox is an apolitical outlet, I haven't had to participate in the discourse, which is nice because no matter what you say, you're going to make a bunch of people really angry.
Yeah.
It's
truly a better way. But again, what the discourse needs is more grown-up voices.
Yes.
More articulate. Like I said, we need a commercially viable, profitable, you know, something that could put up big numbers that features just great reporting and then great opinion and done in a measured, articulate way that Americans find that, yeah, like I want to watch that and it's not there yet. Hopefully somebody's going to devise that. Now I got asked last night and I wrote it down to make sure I asked you, if you're going to send somebody who's in the military, in a different part of the world, a gift for Thanksgiving or Christmas, what would you send? So what, and you got to get it in the mail pretty quick here. If you think back, what were the favorite things that you got while you were overseas?
A thumb drive with a bunch of TV shows and movies on it.
Really?
For me, I'm a big – like I watch old TV shows as a form of comfort. Star Trek The Next Generation. It's a big one for me. Even old episodes of Family Guy or The Simpsons, those work for me. Something that I don't have to think real hard about, but is familiar.
Nova,
so
Novocaine for the brain, man.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Just a little break, a little respite. You know, you could be sitting on a cot in a tent, watching an old episode of Family Guy on your iPod Classic, which is what I did a lot. And as long as you're paying attention to the screen, you can kind of let everything else melt away for a minute. And that was always very valuable to me. For other guys, flavor, condiments, hot sauce, stuff like that was always really, really popular. Anything that you could pour on your wheat snack bread to make it taste a little different than it did yesterday was always real popular.
I'll tell you one that this may surprise you, but it shouldn't. It won't. You know, Hickory Farms has these boxes that you can send, right? And somebody got one. And I got a homemade version of one that a friend of mine sent. But it was like this great sausage, and there was two or three different kinds in there, and there was a bunch of crackers, and there was like a mustard sauce to put on it. There was a couple other different sauces, and it was like this ready-made feast of things that tasted like you hadn't tasted in months. It tasted like home, right?
Honestly, that's a winner right there.
And so, and it's all packaged, right? It's a box, and none of it goes bad. And so, to me, I remember scarfing on that, because the rule is when you open it and it's food, you got to share it, right?
Yep.
That's the rule. Whether it's your mom's homemade cookies that are half stale that taste awesome, even in their staleness, right? You're like, oh my God, these taste so good. And your friends are like, God, your mom's a great cook. Yum, 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 yum. And they're gone in like 30 seconds. And you're like,
and for anybody who's not sure what that's like, I remember I had a friend who was PAO when I was in Africa. And so she was staying in Maputo City in an actual hotel. Whoa. We were out at Camp War Turtle sleeping in holes. So they made the 4-hour drive up to where we were to do a story or take pictures or whatever. And one of the PAOs brought me a Monster from the city, a Monster energy drink. And not only was it like the greatest gift that I've ever received in my life, but like you would be hard pressed to find 10 Marines who weren't crowded around me asking for a sip. We had coffee, we had caffeine. It was just this thing that tasted like something we hadn't had in a while. And that was enough to almost start a mob. One Monster energy drink in our little tent city. So,
right.
A little taste of home goes a long way.
Oh my God! And that's what this magical Hickory Farms, you know, box is. And so I would also tell you that you can do that if you know, like a lot of towns have little. You know, you go to a deli and you could build your own. You could get like a meat sticks and anything that's sealed and vacuumed, to include some cheeses, because it's going to be in a. You know, somebody said, well, a couple weeks is not all going to be bad. No, it's not going to all be bad. And even if it's kind of bad, it doesn't make any difference.
It's tastes still like fine. Yeah, right. It's still fine.
Yeah, we will still eat it. We're not confined by like expiration dates and shit like that. We would get chocolate stuff that would literally, like a bag of one of those foil bags of like Butterfingers, like those bite-sized Butterfingers. In Iraq, and it's 130 degrees in, you know, in the summer, and you grab the bag and it's liquid. And what do you do with the bag, right? You throw it in the freezer, right?
Yep.
And then you get a knife out, your K-bar or something, and you start chipping it up, right? And everybody's eating it. And so it's not like the normal rules of life don't normally govern there. But we're not living like that. So we tend to be aboard ship and at base camps now. We're not so much living in holes as much as we used to be. And so you can.
But still, a little taste of home goes a long way.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? My mom sent her oatmeal cookies, and my wife sent, you know, my ex-wife sent them. And literally, they take you back. It's like this magical Star Wars moment. You're all of a sudden you're beamed back, because those are the tastes of home. My mom's Aunt Tina's oatmeal cookies, the best cookies ever invented on the history of the planet. And it was a box. And they were all fractured in pieces. It did not matter.
I've got one more to add. I'd be remiss. Justin Lee, he's an F-35 pilot who writes for Sandbox News, wrote an entire article recently about how he had an entire deployment changed by a box of Chick-fil-A sauces. He said they got a box of just Chick-fil-A sauces. They passed them all around the wing. And he's, according to him, it made a bad deployment into a good deployment. Just,
think
a
about
little
that.
Bit of
think
Chick-fil-A
about that.
Sauce.
Any chicken that they ate, right? Any French fries that they had, Chick-fil-A sauce magically changed it. What, you know what? That is a huge, huge, huge winner. That's all. That's quality advice right there. Right. That's quality. And you could send that like once a month.
Seriously.
Seriously.
You know?
That's a great, great gift because it impacts your life on a daily basis.
And it's something that isn't as painful to share because there are some things you get where you're like, I don't want to share this. I'm going to hide in my tent and hope that nobody knows that I have it. It never works.
The danger of mail call in a public place.
Yeah.
If you get a package, like what's that? And then somebody, one of your friends will know, oh, that's the food your mom sent.
You're yep.
Like, no, it's not. It's
I know you got some pictures of your wife. Let me see those too.
It's underwear. It's underwear, man. It's not what the food my mom sent me. Please, come on. Open it right now. You gotta share it. And you do. And everybody gets a little trip to home. But that's why the Chick-fil-A sauce. How would you hide that though? You bust out Chick-fil-A sauce in a chow hall like overseas?
It's gonna disappear.
Yeah, you'd be assaulted. Hey man. What?
What? I'm sorry, it's like the mob that formed around my one Monster energy drink. If it had been a can of Skull, it probably would have been even worse.
Hey, why are you putting your French fries under the table? No reason.
No reason. Don't talk to me about it.
Just trying to cool them off. They're half frozen, bro. Yeah, I know. I like them colder than they already are, though. What do you got underneath there? He's got Chick-fil-A sauce. What? The whole chow hall stops. All right. What do you? You know what? That's a great article suggestion for Sandbox. Is somebody written it yet?
Well, we do have a couple articles actually about which care packages are best for different circumstances.
Got it.
I do like Justin Lee's suggestion of just sending Chick-fil-A sauce.
That's not a bad one.
But we've got a couple other pieces out there too about good care packages for people who are deployed, but also if you've got a loved one who just joined the military, sometimes. I'm not saying for a holiday care package, but if you've got a loved one who just recently reached the fleet, they just got to their first unit, send them some cleaning supplies. I know that sounds like a lame gift, but they're going to be responsible for making sure their barracks room is spotless on their own for a lot of these people for the first time in their lives. And they do not always know what they need to buy or where they can get what they need to buy to clean their bathroom floor. As an NCO, that was a big part of my job was inspecting barracks rooms and then being like, great, your room sucks. So that means you and I both get to be back here on Saturday morning at 07:30 to make sure you clean it again properly. Send them some cleaning supplies and maybe some instructions on how to use them.
Wow. Yeah, I would be disappointed, honestly, if I got a package. Now, again, that can't be the only package.
Yeah, that can't be a gift. That can't be a gift.
You can send that, but you got to have box number two that's got to have something that they can stick in their mouth.
Because even if they're stateside and in the barracks, a taste of home still goes a long way.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's amazing how it teleports you back to this other place that you used to live in and that you used to be a part of.
That was the biggest part of family day, graduating in Paris Island. I got to go into a store and pick a candy bar and eat it. And as little as that sounds, after just 3 months, you know, on PI, that felt like a life-altering experience. I still remember that candy bar as the best candy bar I've ever eaten in my life, you know?
How sad. What a low bar. All right, what do you got going this week on Sandbox News?
We've got all kinds of great content coming out. We've got a couple of pieces by George Hand. As I mentioned before, he's a Delta Force operator. We've got a couple really cool original pieces from him. Another one from Justin Lee, our F-35 pilot instructor. And I've got one about the Lockheed XFV that's going to be coming out pretty soon. It was an aircraft we worked on back in the 1950s that was kind of a predecessor to the Osprey, except like if Dr. Robotnik had built it. So we've got all kinds of great stuff. I know that the election is going on this week and that for the most part people are going to be really focused on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but everybody needs a little Novocaine in life. I mean,
exactly.
Look,
need a break.
The election probably not going to be decided tomorrow night.
Agreed.
Right? With all the mail-in ballots and all that kind of stuff. And so if it's close, it'll drag on. There's a good chance it'll wind up in court. And the craziness will be nonstop. Right.
And let's remember that our military apparatus is still facing down real threats on the horizon while we have paintball
while
wars.
We create imaginary ones here. While we create imaginary ones here at home.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
And let me tell you, and you will hear hysteria if that occurs, right? If this thing gets drug out, you will see shit on television that will be crazy. And we've already seen a whole bunch of crazy shit, but you know, stand by for heavy rolls, and heavy seas. So everybody needs Novocaine.
So swing by sandboxnews.com with two X's in sandbox every day, because we're going to have some stuff up there that's interesting, that's entertaining, that's informative, and that is entirely apolitical. So if you need a break from all of this nonsense, make sure you swing by Sandbox. You can also follow me on social media. On Facebook, it's Alex Hollings Writer. On Twitter, it's AlexHollings52. Or you could swing by AlexHollings.com. But primarily, go to SandboxNews.com, and you're going to find lots of really interesting stuff that you can use to unplug your brain from the hate drip that you're consistently fed from all the other mainstream news outlets.
You know what? It's kind of interesting. This thought just plowed through my head. You know, we were talking that there's one path to success in this country. And Alex, you walked it, right?
I'm still trying my best to roll.
Well,
down
let me just tell you. I mean, if you would have chosen, you have more than enough shit in your background that could have derailed you from being the human being that you are, from having, you know, the beautiful family that you have now. And you're an example of, you know, economically certainly challenged, right? You know, in terms of, you know, your family challenges there as well. And yet, you know, you've made yourself something. Nobody gave that to you. And to me, that has to be the message to everybody. I don't care what your race, color, or creed is. If you're going to make something of yourself, you've got to do it. And if you think somebody else is going to come invite you off the couch, you know, to take a, you know, $190,000 job playing video games, probably not going to happen. That line is fairly lengthy. Right?
Yeah.
Right? And so you've got to go fight for it. And you're a great example of it in terms of what you've done.
Two things I want to say to that.
And let me just tell you, how old are you?
35.
Okay. Sandbox News will not be the last place you work at and will not be the last great thing you do in your life, because what Alex has done with Sandbox is he's put it on the map. And it continues to grow like a weed on a monthly basis. And so that's the story that Shelby Steele tells in What Killed Michael Brown. How we've convinced a race of people in this country that somebody else is going to give something to you and somebody else is going to be there for you, when the truth is you've got to be there for yourself. And Alex is an example of it.
So before I say anything else to that, I want to say I think the very same about you. But also I'd like to say that means a great deal to me, man. Oh. I really respect and admire what you've done. For you to say that to me means a lot. I really appreciate it.
Well, let me just tell you,
that really struck a chord with me. You just made my whole day.
It's the fucking truth. And that's why, to me, at the end of the Shelby Steele movie about What Killed Michael Brown, you know what my thought was? Okay. How do I make a difference in somebody's life? Right? Can I become a really big brother? Right? Am I too old to be a big brother? You know, and I have the time in my life now to do that. Right?
I think that you do, man. With post-traumatic winning, that's kind of what you do.
Well, no, you're right. But I mean, I could create a relationship with a young man, right, in my community, who is looking, whose family, his mom probably comes from a single, you know, parent family, whose mom would like You know, and I have the credentials. I'm my own businessman. I'm a Marine. I'm a retired Marine officer. I'm the father of four. I would love to be able to mentor a young kid, let him tag along with me, and in some way, shape, or form, influence him. And I think we all need to ask that question: how do I help this problem? How do I help people that are looking, actively looking for help? And what can I do? You know, as an American, as a member of our culture, you know, what can I do to make it better? And so, and to me, again, I mean, I was talking about this stuff. I mean, that's our responsibility as members of this culture. How do you make it better? What can you do to make one other person better? And I mean, and imagine how much it would take if all of us did that.
I was just going to say, if more people thought like that, if more people thought like you, a lot of the problems that we have in this country would be solved without us having to demand that the government solve our problems for us.
Right. Because let me just tell you, it's a lie. They're not going to solve
your
problem.
They're never going to.
No.
You know, and we have a bad habit, not to go down another rabbit hole, but we have a bad habit of when the government won't solve problems for us, then we demand that corporations do, right? That's the next step as we go. First we say, well, they ought to pass a law that'll fix this. And if they don't do that, then we go, well, this big company ought to change what it does to fix this. And the truth is, we've got to fix things. It's up to us. We can't yell at other people to solve our problems.
Well, let me relate this. You just mentioned post-traumatic winning. So last night after I watched this thing, I'm thinking, this is what post-traumatic winning is. What post-traumatic winning says, and I say this to Marines. I said, hey, look, man, if you're waiting for Mother Marine Corps to come down here and fix this, it ain't fucking happening, man. All you have to do is look at the data. Every year, which way does suicide go? Which way does all this destructive behavior go? It goes up in the DOD. So if you're waiting for Mother Marine Corps to come down, it ain't happening. You know who's going to fix this? You fuckers are. And then I show them data. And I tell them, look, I didn't come here, right, to flap my yap, to make myself look good, to make a little bit of money. I came here to tell you the truth and change lives here in the hopes that if you'll go do these things, guess what's going to happen? You're going to change other people's lives, which will then transform your life. And that's what I'm here to sell. And let me show you the fucking data. So this is not theoretical to me. This is the truth. And it's flat black traumatic wisdom that paves the way for this shit. This is not some PhD nonsense. This is you. This is the truth of the Marine Corps. And that's why I love it so fucking much. So if you're waiting for somebody else to come rescue you, for somebody to create the greatest prescription drug that's going to make you okay, it ain't fucking happening. You will cure you. You will cure this. So it's the same fucking message. Whoa, how about that for some heavy shit?
I love it.
I know, man. It is. I take the best drug in the fucking world. This Friday, I'll be doing it with 3-5. The week following that, with 7th ESB. Right, the book's getting further and further along. The 5-part series. I'm getting ready to do another version of it that will include me, and not just me narrating it, but me doing it. And that's gonna get ready. I'm going to blow this bitch up, man. And I'm so fired up because it's the same fucking message. What can we do? And when you see what we can do, I mean, you'll see why guys like Alex has done what he's done. But it starts with you. And so with that said, thank you very much for the visit today.
Thanks, brother. Honestly, thank you.
No. Hey, let me tell you. You know, I've watched you. How long have we been doing this? 3 years, maybe?
3 years now? I don't even know. Time flies.
Yeah. I mean, no, but I've watched you as you've gone from place to place to place to place to place. And every time it's a better step. Every time it's more responsibility. But what you do, you always do, is you always do quality work. And I think there's a lesson in that. If you work your ass off, if you're an honest human being, if you try hard, if you're a straight shooter, people respect that. But the biggest thing is you got to put a number up. And if you put a number up, then people will invite you back. And you've consistently done that. And you've earned every piece of it. And
I'm
you've gone from...
I'm going to record that and send it to my boss.
Oh, well,
my quarterly review is due this week, as a matter
yeah,
of fact.
Yeah, tell them to call me. And let me tell you, you've gone from like arsonist striking a small hut in rural Georgia to being a plantation owner in a different part of Georgia, right? So, I mean, but again, you've earned every fucking bit of that. And that's the way it works. And you have all kinds of excuses to not have gone there and to be able to blame other people. That's not the ticket. And I don't care what color you are. I don't care how long you've been in this country. I don't care what race you are. I don't care what religion, what God you worship, or if you worship any at all. There's one path to success, and it's an American path, and everybody can get there. And we've got to get the government. We've got to dissuade people from this notion that the government's going to come down and deliver you from some shit. So, with all of that said, congratulations on the ego boosting segment here today, and.
And, thank you.
Well, you know, we never even talked about your malady. What is wrong with you physically? Why did we not hear you last week?
Yeah, I was in the emergency room while we were supposed to be recording. I to be honest, I don't actually know. The doctor thinks it might be kidney stones, but the tests say it's not kidney stones. There seems to be something going on with my kidneys, I guess I'll find out. I'm hoping that it's just the sort of thing where you go, oh, I got to stop eating this one kind of food, or I got to stop drinking coffee from now on, and then it'll work itself out. But I don't know yet.
Not a stone or anything like that.
They thought it was going to be stones initially, but then when they did a CT scan, right, and they didn't see any. Right. So it seems to be something up with the way my kidneys are working. To be honest, I don't know a ton. I've gone to, you know, a couple doctor's appointments and gotten tests done, but I haven't gotten the phone calls back yet to tell me the good or bad news. So I'll see, I guess. But in the meantime, I'm trying to play it safe. I'm minimizing my caffeine intake, cut alcohol out, trying to eat things that digest easily, you know, and just in case it's whatever it is, you know, trying to do myself some favors.
A little preemptive, healthy. Living.
Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't kill me.
It certainly will not. All right. All right. Thank you. I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
I'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Well, hey, watch those videos.
You got it. I took them down as notes already.
No.
I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. You'll enjoy, boys. See you. That is Alex Hollings here on a Monday. I'm overdue on this program, man. What's up with that? On a Monday, I gotta put this on my website, and then I gotta go vote. Yeah. So if you're just tuning in, hour one is epic. Yeah, don't touch the fucking dial, whatever you do. Hour one is awesome. And let me tell you what I talk about. I watched the Shelby Steele documentary, so I talk about that. I talk about the leaf blower I bought over the weekend. Pfft, how geeked I was, and it uses the same battery and charger as my weed whacker, so it cost me nothing. Right? So, yeah, I had an awesome weekend. I talk about that. I talk about the whole Chicken Little thing, and I talk about a Tom Friedman column. Right? Our democracy will survive. The sun's probably going to come up on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. We will get through this. This country survived the American Civil War. Okay? And so all this notion of, you know, somehow or other America is going to evaporate and go away and the world will look at us so differently. Well, I think the Chinese look at the United States differently now since we started. As Grant Newsham said, we stood up on our hind legs. We talk about all of that. Yeah, but it's an epic hour, trust me. So, on that note, have a great Monday. Do not be afraid to go change somebody's life. I'm fired up. Post-traumatic winning this week down at Camp Pendleton. Yep. So, looking forward to that. And, what else? I think that's it. So, have a great day. Don't be afraid to change somebody's life. All Marine Radio. On November 2nd, 2020. Out.